You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Indiscriminate indicators of compromise spawn fake news about a Vermont grid hack. Meanwhile, the Mounties cautiously, tentatively investigate some odd potential IOCs at an Ontario utility. A hacker claims he pwned the FBI, but it looks like a hoax. A quick rundown of exploits currently romping in the wild, many of them involve ransomware. And yes, your thumbprint will authenticate you to your phone, even if you've dozed off. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, January 5th, 2017. There's no shortage of fraud and alarmism gurgling around in cyberspace this week, but fortunately, there's also no shortage of cooler heads and skeptical eyes either. Last weekend's view halloo over fancy bears prancing through northern Vermont's electrical grid has by now subsided into a never mind, no game there after all. The story is instructive. Burlington Electric, which seems to have been acting soberly and responsibly throughout, had updated its scanners to look for indicators of compromise provided by the Department of Homeland Security in its alerts pertaining to Russian election influence operations. On Friday, one of the utility's employees checked email on Yahoo.com, and the IP address, benign according to ThreatPost, popped up as an IOC. Utility General Manager Neil Lunderville told ThreatPost, "Based on that alert, we isolated the computer and reached out to the feds to let them know what we saw." So far, so good. And by the way, bravo, Burlington Electric. "We sent the report to the feds, and their indication was that they would get back to us. We went home, and the report broke. And it was wrong." Boy, was it ever. Someone was talking to the Washington Post, and it wasn't Burlington Electric. The Post, of course, checked and corrected its story over the weekend, but not before Vermont's governor and congressional delegation were in full cry, baying for GRU blood. We wondered if fear of Russian grid hacking would move north of the border, and it appears it has. Canadian authorities are investigating a possible cyber threat against Ontario's Hydro One electrical utility. There may be nothing more to it than there was to the Burlington Electric incident, but the Royal Canadian Mounted Police are on the case. The Canadian reaction is more cautious and measured than the past week saw from their neighbors to the south. And in any case, the RCMP is on the case. The Mounties always get their man, if there's a man or woman to get. Another claimed hack may be a hoax. The Black Hat showboat hacker who goes by CyberZeist says he compromised a U.S. FBI website and dumped the credentials he harvested on Pastebin, but the caper looks bogus. The Register reports that the security team at Plone, which produces the FBI's content management system, calls hogwash. The email addresses seem to be derived from old publicly available dumps, and the password hashes don't add up either. Speaking of things that don't quite add up, we speak regularly of hacktivists here, people or groups who take up a cause online. But what about faketivists? We checked in with Marika Chauvin, senior threat intelligence researcher at ThreatConnect, about their recent blog post, "Hacktivists versus Faketivists: Fancy Bears in Disguise."
This all kind of began with the DNC breach and its aftermath. a threat actor known as, or a persona known as Goosefer 2.0, kind of came out of the woodwork right after CrowdStrike announced that it had attributed the attacks on the DNC to Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear. So in the Faketivist research that we've done at Threat Connect, we focused primarily on Fancy Bear because we have found overlaps in targeting focus and infrastructure used by Goosefer 2.0, DC Leaks, and Fancy Bear. So the day after the breach was publicized, Goosefer 2.0 emerged with a WordPress blog, and then later, a couple days later, a Twitter handle. Goosefer 2.0 claimed that that persona alone was responsible for the DNC hack, and that they compromised the organization in the summer of 2015. And then what was likely an effort to add some legitimacy to the persona's claims, it then began posting documents that were stolen from the DNC on that blog. Now, interestingly enough, the more that Goosefer 2.0 talked and the more that he claimed, the less sense he made. One claim that was particularly odd was that he compromised the DNC back in September 2015, using the bug that mistakenly gave Bernie Sanders' campaign unauthorized access to voter information. Now, that sounds plausible until you start kind of looking into that bug. And in our conversations with NGP Van, we found that the specific bug that was referenced by Goosefer 2.0 didn't even exist in the code until December 2015. And so I like to say that either this guy, gal, group, this faketivist, either has a TARDIS or a souped-up DeLorean, because, I mean, that's the only way he could have traveled forward in time and then back.
Why a persona at all? You know, why not simply have, you know, WikiLeaks release the information or just have it anonymously go to the press? Was there any sense of what the advantage is of putting, some kind of a face behind this stuff?
I believe so. I mean, I can speculate as to what the people behind the persona were trying to do. But when it comes to something like WikiLeaks, they have no control over the timing of a publication. Whereas if they create their own persona to share that information out, not only do they have the plausible deniability that they would have gotten with something like WikiLeaks, but they also have control over the message that's getting out there and the timing of that information.
That's Marika Chauvin from Threat Connect. Several exploits in the wild draw security researchers' attention. We'll run through some of them quickly. Forcepoint reports the return of the MMCore backdoor spyware in two new variants, Big Boss and Silly Goose. The GDI Foundation warns of a campaign actively targeting MongoDB. Fujitsu and its partners Forcepoint and Recorded Future are tracking the Rig exploit kit, which is now serving TrickBot and Madness QuantLoader. And we note that ransomware does indeed seem to be holding its prominence in the threat landscape. It's increasingly seen equipped with DDoS and doxing functionality. Dunbar Security calls the latter doxware. GoldenEye ransomware is appearing in campaigns targeting HR departments, especially vulnerable because the nature of their business tends to make them willing to open email attachments. There is some good news on this front. MSSoft has a decryptor for version 3 of Globe ransomware. So again, bravo, MSSoft. And finally, we heard yesterday about the Teddy Bear and Billy Bass threats to mental well-being, if not to security. Today, we hear about another toy-related issue. Parents, take heed. An Arkansas mother had secured her iPhone with a nice biometric feature, enrolling her fingerprint to control access. She dozed off, as moms will, in Arkansas and elsewhere. But when she awoke, presumably refreshed, she saw to her horror that she apparently had been hacked. The indicator of compromise was the purchase of some $250 worth of Pokemon-themed toys from Amazon. Before mom could call ISAC Mama to report the incident for investigation, her 6-year-old daughter proudly told her, "Mommy, I was shopping." The child had used sleeping mom's thumb to unlock sleeping mom's iPhone. We say, don't feel bad, friend. A lot of us have been there.
To Today's episode is sponsored by SRM, your first call for cybersecurity and investigations. Threats today are evolving faster than ever before, and since 2005, SRM has pioneered tailored security solutions for global corporations and their executives. Whether it's defending against cyber attacks with their award-winning team of ethical hackers and incident response specialists, or navigating the murky waters of compliance and ESG challenges, SRM's insight and straightforward advice will help you navigate complex risks and emerge more resilient. Their secret? A culture that nurtures the sharpest minds, giving them access to the newest technologies and the freedom to solve problems in new ways, enabling them to craft simple, effective solutions for your unique cyber challenges. Search Your First Call to discover how SRM can help your business. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Rick Howard. He's the CSO at Palo Alto Networks. He also heads up Unit 42, which is their threat intel team. Rick, you had a recent blog post. It was called The Next Board Problem, Automatic Enterprise Security Orchestration. This is a new term to me. Describe what you're talking about when you're talking about security orchestration.
Yeah, this is something that's been popped up in the last year or so. Lots of network defenders are struggling with this idea. And it's kind of this evolving evolution of how we manage our network defense. You know, when I first started doing this in the 90s, all we had was defense in depth. And, you know, we would put random controls in our networks and hope that the bad guy would be stopped. And back in those days, you know, we all had three controls. We had a firewall, we had an antivirus solution, and we had an intrusion prevention system. And when we only had three, it was easy enough to manage. But defense in depth really hasn't worked that well, and we've been struggling with it till about 2010, when Lockheed Martin and crew wrote a white paper describing the kill chain. And what they realized is that we needed to put prevention controls at every phase of the kill chain. And security vendors were only too happy to find really great products to put at each of those spots. And what has happened then is an explosion of security tools. We call them point products. That everybody has to manage. Typical organizations that I run into are running 15 to 20 point products that just do security down the kill chain. Other high-end organizations with lots of resources, they're managing 80 point products. I talked to one financial a couple weeks ago. He claims to have 150.
Wow.
And how do you manage all those things? And the dirty secret in the security community is that we expect the customer to do that. And it is my experience that you pay for a point product three times. You buy the box, you got to buy a person who can make the box go, maintain it, keep the blinky lights going. And you got to buy a person who understands the data coming off the box. And you probably need a fourth person who can stitch them all together. If you have 15 point products, someone has to be able to paint a coherent picture. Well, most organizations cannot do that. And it's expensive and time consuming and it just doesn't get done. And what many organizations do is just deploy those machines and in the default configurations and hope that they do some good. So there are two models that have emerged to try to fill that need. And one is the platform play, and all the firewall vendors have a platform play, where they put all those point products into a single platform for the purpose of stopping the bad guys down the kill chain. So that's one model. Mm-hmm. The other model is third-party vendors doing the orchestration for the customer, meaning they might be a cloud play and they might orchestrate 20 or 30 of the point products themselves. So you give them permission to do that for you. So those are sort of the two competing models that are doing this orchestration bit.
So is the notion to take some of the complexity away from the organization, sort of I'll job that out to someone else?
Yeah, because most organizations barely have enough to do their security operations center. They definitely don't have enough people to do intelligence and maintenance of all the gear that they have. So the question customers are asking us is, why aren't the security vendors talking to each other and getting this stuff done, or helping us to move closer to that goal of getting all done without them having to do all of it? And so these are the models that are pushing forward.
All right, interesting stuff. Rick Howard, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.